Leviticus 22. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, Speak to Aharon and his sons, and say that they abstain from the holy things of the people of Israel, which they dedicate to me, so that they do not profane my holy name. I am the Lord. Say to them, If any one of all your offspring throughout your generations approaches the holy things that the people of Israel dedicate to the Lord, while he has an uncleanness, that person shall be cut off from my presence. I am the Lord. None of the offspring of Aharon who has a leprous disease or a discharge may eat of the holy things until he is clean. Whoever touches anything that is unclean through contact with the dead, or a man who has an emission of semen, or whoever touches a swarming thing by which he may be unclean, or a person from whom he may take uncleanness, whatever his uncleanness may be, the person who touches such a thing shall be unclean until the evening, and shall not eat of the holy things unless he has bathed his body in water. When the sun goes down, he shall be clean, and afterward he may eat of the holy things, because they are his food. He shall not eat what dies of itself or is torn by beasts, and so make himself unclean by it. I am the Lord. They shall therefore keep my charge, lest they bear sin for it and die thereby when they profane it. I am the Lord who sanctifies them. A layperson shall not eat of a holy thing. No foreign guest of the priest or hired worker shall eat of the holy thing. But if a priest buys a slave as his property for money, the slave may eat of it, and anyone born in his house may eat of his food. If a priest's daughter marries a layman, she shall not eat of the contribution of the holy things. But if a priest's daughter is widowed or divorced and has no child and returns to her father's house, as in her youth, she may eat of her father's food, yet no layperson shall eat of it. And if anyone eats of a holy thing unintentionally, he shall add the fifth of its value to it and give the holy thing to the priest. They shall not profane the holy things of the people of Israel, which they contribute to the Lord, and so cause them to bear iniquity and guilt by eating their things, for I am the Lord who sanctifies them. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, Speak to Aharon and his sons and all the people of Israel, and say to them, When any one of the people of Israel or of the sojourners of Israel presents a burnt offering as his offering for any of their vows or freewill offerings that they offer to the Lord, if it is to be accepted for you, it shall be a male without blemish of the bulls or the sheep or the goats. You shall not offer anything that has a blemish, for it will not be acceptable for you. And when anyone offers a sacrifice of peace offerings to the Lord to fulfill a vow or as a freewill offering from the herd or from the flock to be accepted, it must be perfect. There shall be no blemish in it. Animals blind or disabled or mutilated or having a discharge or an itch or scabs you shall not offer to the Lord or give them to the Lord as a food offering on the altar. You may present a bull or a lamb that has a part too long or too short for a freewill offering, but for a vow offering it cannot be accepted. Any animal that has its testicles bruised or crushed or torn or cut you shall not offer to the Lord. You shall not do it within your land. Neither shall you offer as the bread of your God any such animals gotten from a foreigner, since there is a blemish in them. Because of their mutilation, they will not be acceptable for you. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, When an ox or sheep or goat is born, it shall remain 7 days with its mother, and from the eighth day on it shall be acceptable as a food offering to the Lord. But you shall not kill an ox or a sheep and her young in one day. And when you sacrifice a sacrifice of thanksgiving to the Lord, you shall sacrifice it so that you may be accepted. It shall be eaten on the same day. You shall leave none of it until morning. I am the Lord. So you shall keep my commandments and do them. I am the Lord. And you shall not profane my holy name, that I may be sanctified among the people of Israel. I am the Lord who sanctifies you, who brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim to be your God. I am the Lord.
Verse 28, don't kill both her and her young on the same day.
Yes.
That would imply that both the mom and the newborn
Correct.
Are very aware of each other.
Yeah, it has to do, though, with the eighth day. That's what's important here in the subject matter. So what's this subject matter about? Okay, next question. Is this of any value to us today in the 21st century?
I'm sure it is.
So what is it? What is it? You remember what I said about chapter 21? What is the subject matter and who was he talking to?
A high priest.
Chapter 22, who's he talking to? The high priest. So this subject matter again goes both chapter 21 and 22 deal with the subject matter of the functions or should we say the actions of a high priest in the physical world, in the physical realm at that point in time. One thing I want to express again, I know you've heard me say this many times before, try your very best not to move this into the 21st century. Stay back there during the time of Moses. There's not even 1 year out of Egypt yet. And they're being taught, they're being instructed, both now, these last two chapters, well, a lot of, more than that, but are being instructed by to the high priest exactly how to conduct themselves, what they to do. Chapter 21, what was the subject matter?
Holy and unholy.
No, I am holy and I have sanctified Aaron and his sons, nobody else, to be high priest. So the subject matter here in chapter 21 and 22 is he's talking to Aaron and the high priest. Not to the Jews, not to the Greeks, not to the Romans, not to the Christians, not to the Muslims. He's talking to whom? So we have to keep this in mind, exactly who we're talking about. All right? So as we go through this thing, the very first thing that we see there in verse 2 is what? I'm going to read it in Old English so you understand it better. Speak unto Aaron and his sons, that they, Aaron and his sons, separate themselves from the holy things of the children of Israel. Separate themselves from something. Okay, now here is a specific thing. The people of Israel are giving that which is holy unto God. And he gives it to the high priest. The high priest receives this holy thing. Now, the first thing he says, I want to separate you from that. Now, what does he mean by separate you from? He says, don't profane my name, okay, in those holy things. So now we have to do the name again, right? So he's instructing them and telling them, which, in Old English, they, the people of Israel, hallowed or they have made holy unto me. The people have given God to God holy things. Remember I told you that last week, or several times now, that when we go from chapter 10, we don't go back there again, and the first 10 of Leviticus, what was the Lord saying to the high priest? What was their job? Okay, that's their function. To teach the people, when they're unclean, how to become clean. And also, when they are unholy, how to become holy. I told you that we have, because of the Christian world and Jewish world and Catholic world and every world, we turf the word holy and we make it so far above the ability to reach that status, even though the Creator of heaven, through His word, says, be you holy. Oh, I'm not. That's what he said. Yes, you can be. And see, I've separated because of religiosity, is the word I'm going to use. Because of religiosity, regardless of what religion it is, they separate and say, oh, that's holy, don't touch it. That's holy, don't go there. I'm not holy, I can't go there. But the Creator of heaven says, yes, you are. Now, everybody is made holy to do a function. Not just to be, but to do a function. And when God has called you, and I told you last week that if you do certain things, God says you are holy. We say, well, no, we're not. And God says, yes, you are. And we challenge God on those words. And that's human being. We can't picture ourselves being holy like him. Like he says, be you holy because I am holy. And we put God in some kind of air of misty, of unknown. And yet it's all written down, isn't it? Everything about God is written down. His mind, his thought, his actions, his thinking, and what he does. And the book of Leviticus is one of those books he tells you in great detail, point after point after point after point, from chapter 1 all the way to the end, of exactly how he thinks, exactly how he acts, exactly what he wants, exactly how he lives, what is it you don't know about God? It's in the book of Leviticus. It tells you everything, right? So we're at this point now. He's talking now to a certain, shall we say, holy group. In this case, the ones of Aaron and his sons. That is the high priest. Now, I could be holy, but if I'm not of the priest of Aaron priesthood, I am not to function in the manner that he has commanded the high priest to function in. You remember, these are appointments. They didn't raise their hand and say, "I'm vote for me." They couldn't get out of it. Remember Aaron's two sons? They couldn't get out of it. They weren't saved, "Oh, I'll give you pardon. We'll have to remove you because you didn't do it the way I want." He eliminated them. Now, so would you like to be part of God being appointed, knowing that you could be eliminated if you don't do your job? Yes.
It's one of the hard things to come to realization when you start studying Torah, that the laws are different in Torah instructions. Not every one of them applies to everybody.
We have to be aware of that. The first part of Leviticus tells you that. There's certain sacrifices or offerings, they're all called offerings, by the way. Only two of them are the ones you were required to do. What are the two you're required to do? No, free will is free.
Sin offering and guilt offering.
Sin and guilt offering. You're required to do that to get in line and back in subject matter with God. The rest are all free will. Why would he make them all free will? Why didn't he just command it? You must do it.
Because he wants us to do it from our heart.
That's the object of God. The book of Deuteronomy says, "Oh, if there were just a heart in them, just to do what I want them to do, if they would just hear and respond to what I do." And so, Leviticus is very detailed, extremely detailed, of how each person, and not only, we went through this before in the past, how a leader is to conduct himself different than, a farmer. Because a leader has greater responsibility because he's been appointed to do the job, whether he wanted to or not. How many kings in the past, and with my son been going through this thing, and other countries, that God said to the prophet, "Go and anoint him the king of Israel, or king of Assyria, or king of this, king of that, king of this." Those guys didn't think about it. Now also the king of Israel, God said to them, "Go and anoint this man king of Israel." All of a sudden he's king of Israel. He didn't vote for it. He didn't run a lesson of morality. He didn't run a lesson of what's right and what's wrong. He just, God said, do it. Who was the first king of Israel? Huh? Jeroboam, Rehoboam? Yeah. Huh? Jeroboam. Now, he became one because God appointed him to be one. The guy didn't vote. He didn't go out there and say, "Vote for me, I'm the new king." Get the majority of people voting. And we know from history that sometimes, especially the sons of David, they just took over as if they were the next king, right? Guess what happened to them? They died. Because they were not appointed by God. It is God who appoints the kings. Now, you could say, I wish I was a king. Be careful. The book of Kings tells you it's not always a good thing to be a king. And you're not fulfilling what God wants you to do. It might be recorded as he did not what was right in the eyes of the Lord. We'd like to have that from God. But see, they were appointed. We have to remember that God is the one who is ruler of everything and all things. Now, back here to Leviticus, we're talking about the high priest. And it says there, verse 3, it says, say unto them, that is Aaron and his sons, all right, whoever he be, even generations from now, that goes into the holy, goes into the holy things, which the children have holied unto Yahuwah, having his, what?
Uncleanness.
That soul, or that nephesh, shall be cut off in my presence. Cut off. This is not cut off from the house of Israel, being cut off as priest. All the sons of Aaron, all the children of Aaron, because this is about the priesthood. We went through the thing about being cut off from the house of Israel, and then we're being cut off from the house from God. Two different issues. We thought all the same thing. No, two different issues.
Not dead. Just cut off.
Just cut off.
Does that mean salvation is cut off too?
I'm sorry, what?
Does that mean that they won't be saved and get to cut off?
Salvation is not what the book of Leviticus is about. I'm sorry, it's not about salvation.
Why is that cut off then?
Being no longer receiving the promises or the jurisdiction of being a priest. You've done it. You're unclean. Get out of here. You're becoming careless. Get out of here. You will not become a priest. That's as simple as that. Okay? It's not saying you cannot defile God and be dead because two of his sons were killed, right? But we're going to have to do and pay attention very closely to what he's saying here. We always fear from time when I said the book of Leviticus, it's about how God thinks, how God acts, how God walks. Period. And so this is the book of instructions. Right? Who's he instructing? Gotta keep that in mind. And keep also in mind that the Son of God is the priesthood of Melchizedek. The priesthood of Melchizedek came first. Then the priest of Aaron, Aaronic, came second. The priesthood of the Levitical priesthood, of Aaronic priesthood, is a shadow of Melchizedek. All right? If you think Melchizedek is a different kind of priest, then God wastes his time showing us what a priest should be like. All right? Now we know that Yahshua became the high priest of Melchizedek after the order of Melchizedek. We know that part. But not after the order of Aaron. Because he wasn't a son. He was not even an Aaron. He didn't belong to that tribe. He belonged to another tribe. And it says here, no man from any other group can come in and do. Right? You got that? So we keep on going here. He said, now of course, if he is a leopard or has a running issue, we've talked about that before, what is clean and unclean. Because remember that first thing, if unclean upon him. Now, we're talking about the things that are unclean. We went to the port of being a leper or disease. That's unclean. Can you become clean? Yes. And you have a running issue, means you have a bowel movement that's really like, you can. Can you, are you always unclean with it? Yes. Can you become clean? Yes. Because it goes on here and it says, you can become clean. Then he goes out and says, and he shall not eat, because he's unclean, he'll not things eat those things that are holy unto me until he be cleaned. So a priesthood, if he's got a problem, he can't serve, nor can he even serve the Holy of Holies. He can't go in and serve anything until he comes from the state of uncleanness to the state of clean. I've said before, being unclean is not a sin. Being clean is the object. When you touch a dead person, you're unclean. You're not sinning, because you said bury the thing, get rid of it, take it out of my sight. When Aaron's sons died, guess who had to pick up the dead bodies? They became unclean. They had to become clean again because they touched dead bodies. Okay? So being unclean is not a sin. It's just being unclean. Well, we're clean. Then he says about being holy and unholy. Well, that's a part of this section. We went through all the clean and unclean. This section is talking about being holy and unholy. And we're talking here specifically about the priest. That priest, if you're unclean, don't come around. Does that make sense to you? We think, well, God, you got real strict rules, don't you? Yes, he does. But why would he want that? Let's continue on before we touch that one. He says in verse 5, you touch anything that is a creeping thing. Okay, like, you know, what? A lizard?
A spider.
A spider. You went fishing, you had to get the worms out and go fishing, throw it into the fish, would eat them. But guess what? You're unclean. Now you had to become self-clean. Because you've touched something that's unclean. He has been made clean, and he has to do something with his uncleanness. Well, we're talking high priest now, and we also know that Torah talks about the average person making sure they themselves do the very same process, but for a different function. And that function is, be you holy because I am holy. Here, chapter 21 and 22, says, I have sanctified, set apart Aaron, and your sons, I set them apart to do a function from all the house of Israel, even from the tribe of Levi. Narrowed it down to a very small group of people. And so all these rules and regulations seem real hard, don't they? But it's about how God is. Now, why would he tell us all these things?
To me, some of this just plain makes sense. If I have to pick up a banana slug somewhere, I'm going to go get clean.
Yeah.
In our society, we think this stuff is unclean.
And sometimes in our world, we don't think of that very well. Why is it an issue with God, though? I mean, you accidentally touch something that's unclean. What do? Well, okay, no big deal. Yes.
Well, he doesn't always give us the reasons why. We just find out later on through science.
Oh, he does give us reasons why. And he tells the high priest the reason why. I have sanctified you. I have set you apart from all of the other house of Israel and from your Levite tribe. I have set you apart to do what? To do those things that are holy unto me. When the people give me something that is holy, make sure you don't profane it. Make sure you don't pollute it. Make sure that you are clean if you're going to offer it to me. Make sure you are in the right condition. Physically. Yes.
I'm seeing the bigger picture here. The key in here is not profaning his name. So
always.
The things that he's setting up to do is to show how great that reputation is. So when the function of the high priest is doing the work of helping me forgive my sins and transgressions by the free will offerings, or
right.
Those are not free will offerings, but it shows how pure and just and the promise that it is going to do what he says it's going to do.
Remember, the one thing about priesthood, you must be much higher in life, how you conduct yourself. She had a question over here.
Well, the more we read through this stuff, the more I recognize how all of the things he tells the high priest they have to be, they're all what the Messiah is. It was a picture to the people. As long as the high priest stayed within these lines, the people had something to look at that was the picture of the Messiah to come.
Picture of the Messiah to come, with a picture of that other high priest to come. Picture of the Melchizedek. Was the Melchizedek priesthood defiled? He was the priest of the Most High what? That's very interesting, you know. So we have our Messiah. He is the king. He's the high priest of the what? Most High. Who's Most High? Huh? The Father, the creator of heaven and earth. His Son is doing exactly what we're doing. Now, I grant you that human beings make mistakes, human beings make errors, and God even has a little cover here for them if they do. Did you notice that in this chapter? There's a way to straighten yourself out, become clean. Okay, then you go back and do your functions. What happens? Because sometimes you touch things that are unclean. Or you handle things that are unclean. Or something unclean touched you. They had to be fully aware of everything around about them in their Torah life. He dropped on down and he says, you're being clean until the sun goes down, but you must wash yourself in water. All right. He says there, you should not defile yourself. Why? I am Yahuwah. Don't defile yourself. If you're unclean and you don't do this job, and you go and you do that, you have defiled yourself. When you have defiled yourself, what does God do when you defile yourself? I'm talking to the high priest. You're out. You're no longer going to function as high priest. He says, from your seed onward. And he says now, those who are to keep my commandments. Why? Verse 23-29 is why. You must keep my ordinances. Why? Lest you bear sin and die. Pretty heavy stuff, don't you think? I, Yahuwah, do sanctify them. Because he's talking to Aaron and his sons and his seed from that point on down. I have sanctified them. Now, yes, we already read where God sanctified us, made us holy, made us right, made us connection. But he sanctified them to do a different sanctification from us. He separated them from us. He separated Aaron from the house of Levi. Because everyone has a function. You know what it says there? What did Apostle Paul say? Not all can be apostles. Not all can be evangelists. Not all can be teachers. But everyone, if they're fitly formed and formed within the house, is it okay to be not a high priest? According to the word of God, yeah. But if you're an apostle, or going to become apostle by the point of the Messiah, what did he say to his apostles? Oh my, you forgot already? They asked him, how come you speak in parables to them, but you tell us what's going on? And he says, it's not meant for them to know. It's meant for you to know. And he said, what was that phrase? For much is given to you, much is expected from you. Not from them. He's not expecting them to be like some famous person. What happened to the apostles' life? They had lived peaceful and happy and wonderful and joy and singing and dancing like we do. A lot of them got killed, murdered, slaughtered. They knew they were going to get killed and murdered and slaughtered. Would you like to be that? So when you're wanting peace, I want to be a prophet. Be careful. You call yourself an apostle? Be careful. Don't be singing and dancing and praising, because you're good. You could be out there doing something that causes your life. See, God doesn't give us all the same information, the same source, the same thing. What does he say? Apostle Paul says he calls the what kind of people? No. The base ones. That's a real powerful word. Base ones. Guess what? That's with the word of God, right? Through the apostle. We're base. We're the lowest. We're down there. We're down there. We got to get any higher. We're down the bottom. But that's who he calls. Why? To make fools out of those who are thinking they're greater. That's why it's a good not to be a preacher. Thinking you have jurisdiction, authority, and just, oh, for the people, that you're more holier than they are. Horrible, horrible phrase. It's not true. And you all know that, right? Hope you do. Now, there's some interesting things that are said in this particular one. Let's go on the second phase of this particular subject matter of what he says. Priests separate themselves from the things that are holy. You're going to handle holy things that the people of Israel are going to give to the Creator of heaven and earth. Then he goes into and he says, now we go verse 10 and onward. He talks about, okay, be aware of this, O tribe, O house of Aaron. No stranger shall eat the holy things. If you are not, this may sound strange to you, you may be an Ephraimite, but you are a stranger in the house of Aaron. Does that make sense to you? You're not allowed, they were not allowed, no other body except the high, even a Levitical guy cannot walk in there and eat that which is holy. Yes.
So in my version here, in verse 10, it says outsider, and then it does use stranger later on. So are they synonymous, outsider and stranger?
Yeah. The same kind of phrase in Hebrew. One that's not supposed to be there. He wasn't assigned to be set aside, to be separated from, to do the job of high priest. That's why we only have one high priest, don't we? Nobody else has been separated to do that function except Yeshua. Did he live up to it? He died with no sin. I mean, he looked, he knew. And was he told the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the Sanhedrin? You look at the Torah, the law, and you think that's going to give you life. Right? Of course, the Apostle Paul says, no, it doesn't. It kills you. We don't like that part, but he said that. And he says, what did Jesus say? Yeshua say? It's about me. It's not about life that you are going to receive if you do the Torah. It's about me. And only about me. And you've been around long enough. Some of you have been around long enough to know that we've seen the Messiah just about every place we read. And every function of the feasthood, every function of the feast, every function of Sabbath, every function of, you name it. We see the Messiah in it completely. We are being blessed to be connected to it. You understand what I'm saying? We are being blessed to be in that God has granted us to see and to understand what is going on. Now, he goes on, he says, you know, this verse 11 is really strange. 10, 11 is really strange, okay? The other translations have it a little bit differently. The complete Jewish Bible, which I have a hard time with most of the time, but once in a while it hits it right on the nail. No one who is not a Kohen may eat anything holy. Simple as that, right? Kohen means priest. Kohen is a Hebrew word for priest. Quite simple, right? Right to the point, right? But he doesn't have, verse 11 is a little bit awkward in its reading. Let's go to verse 11 in the King James. But if the priests buy any, quote, soul, end of quote, with his money, he shall eat of it. What? And he shall be born in his household. What? And they shall eat his meat. What? What does it say? No one gets to eat that which is holy under any circumstances except the priesthood of Aaron and his sons. What does it mean he buys something? Do we have an answer for that? I'm sorry, what?
It's just like the Messiah. He bought us. So we're allowed to eat, to partake from him.
That's an interesting approach. I never thought about it that way. But I want to go back to Leviticus, though, during the time of the writing. Does anybody have an answer? Have you thought about it? Ever seen it before? Is he really talking about, okay, I'm going to go buy this this Canaanite, going to be my slave. And this Canaanite, who cannot enter the house of God, gets to come in here and eat with me because I bought him. Is that what it says? It says, no stranger. Oh. No one but the Cohen gets to eat it. What? The latter part of the statement is important. Yes.
Cheryl says that the Cohen are assistants to the high priest.
No, they are the high priest. They are.
Oh, they're the high
all
priest.
Priests are called, all priests are called Cohens, and all Cohens are called priests. But we're talking about the high priest here in this situation. This particular one is 80 priests of the house of Aaron. Not of the Catholic Church, not of the Mormon Church, not of the Jewish Church or synagogue. It's of only one. Okay? You have to keep that part very, very clear in the mind. Latter part of it says, with his money he shall eat it, and he that is born of his household. Who's born of his household that he now owns? He owns a slave. You mean a Cohen can buy a Cohen? Or does he buy in something else? Because very clear here, no one gets to eat this. He cannot become a high priest. Yes.
Does it mean because a person born in his household, living in his immediate home, may eat of it because he's sitting at the same table as this priest? Does that mean that if the Kohen accepts and embraces someone that comes, adopts, so to speak, I don't mean buy with money, but pays for that person's well-being, that person who is also sitting at the table may eat.
Now, can you prove that written elsewhere in Leviticus? Okay. I'm sorry. Yes?
Is this a parallel to when King David, in a sense, adopted Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth? Remember it says that when he found him, he allowed him to eat at the king's table, and he was like one of the king's sons.
Like the king's son.
Mm-hmm. Is it like that?
So this particular song in the Bible, according to if you own a slave that's of another country, they become what? And it says if that person who is in bondage now brings forth children, who do the children belong to? The guy who bought him. Doesn't belong to the father, doesn't belong to the mother, it belongs to the guy who bought him. So the children become of his household. When we think about slavery, because America has been so polluted with the corruption of slavery, we don't think of it as a good thing. But if you bought a slave, guess what you're responsible for?
The slave.
Okay, now, in history, during the time of during the time of Abraham and even before that, when you bought a slave, you were required completely and totally to educate them, teach them, lead them, guide them, and provide for them. You don't get to say, I get to whip you. Now, if you're a disobedient slave, that's something a little bit different. The Torah does say you have a right to punish them. Yes?
I was just going to say it's... slavery is a bad word for it. It's more like adopting.
You can say adopting, yeah. And it becomes part of the household. All of a sudden, it becomes part of the household. He's no longer what? Becomes almost no longer a stranger. Even though the previous verse said no stranger. You understand what I'm saying? Now, this one cannot go in and function as a high priest. He only gets to eat with the priest who bought him. He doesn't get to eat anywhere he wants to eat. He gets to eat. Oh, he can eat anything he wants, like the priest can too. But when it comes to the things that are holy, that God has sanctified, and the people of Israel sanctified for God, then he can eat of it. Yes.
It kind of reminds me, I don't remember if it's Corinthians somewhere, but the sanctification of the husband and the children by a praying wife and mother.
Yeah. The same thing, you know, and we talk about the, what's that word in Hebrew, English? Concubine. She is a bought slave lady. She's not a free one. All right? Sarah was a free. Hagar was not free. She was bought. Or payment was given to her because of what happened earlier by, but it belongs to her. She owns him. That's the reason why Aaron had a problem. Says, do what you want to do with it. It's just yours, you know. And she kicked him out. Remember she kicked him out? But she happened to have a child with her. Hadn't have been a child of Abraham, so they had to go back. Anyway, keep in mind a couple of things of how God works. He's not saying, this is okay with me. That's not what he's saying. He says, don't do it. But if you do it, what's he going to do? I know, just kill you. Right? He's not going to give you a way to escape. He's not going to give you an opportunity to change the situation. He just wipes you out, right? Go ahead to hellfire, you know. No, no. He gives him a chance to live. That's God. You can't find where he likes to kill people. Well, the prophecy says, I hate killing the wicked. I don't like it. I despise killing the wicked. I don't want nothing to do with it. But lo and behold, he has to do it. You think God really enjoyed the most wonderful thing in the face of the earth he ever did when he created the flood? Not according to what his word is. He was downright brokenhearted. Downright disappointed. Downright upset. He took it personally. Pretty powerful God, don't you think? Okay, it's going down. Almost finished here. We had a good question?
Yes. So if they buy the slave,
yes,
was the priest also into the same law as every so many years he had to let the slave go? Or that was his forever? Were they under the same thing as everybody
according
else?
According to the Torah, if this slave likes this guy, what does the priest to do? Take it all, boom, in his ear, put a ring in it. Yes, he has to let him go after so many long. Yes. If he's a purchased one for a certain period of time, yes.
He can leave, but his family can't leave if they were not born.
If they were not, yeah. That's another. We're going off on a tangent here. I want to go stick with here, okay? Another section that God started talking about here, and that's verse 71. He says, and the Yahuwah has spoken to Moses again, saying something. He talked about Aaron again and his sons on the children of Israel. Now, he said, now when they bring a vow, the people of Israel bring a vow or a free will offering, they are not to make sure they don't pollute it again. He goes into very strong detail. Now, vow is very important to God. What does a vow do when the man is finished with it, or the woman's finished with it? Is it a blessing or is it a cursing?
What are you talking about?
Vow. Is a vow a blessing or a cursing? If you take the name of God in vain, it's a curse. But if you don't take the God in name in vain and fulfill your vow, then you must also offer something because that's why you take the vow in the first place. You don't take a vow because you have to. You take a vow because you want to.
So what will you offer?
Whatever the situation is, it can be something. See, in this case, you're a whole offering. Offering given to the priest to burn, take the offering and turn it into, let's say, smoke. And it rises up to God. No, he's talking about smoke. Okay? God likens himself to a cloud. Remember that? Yes.
So we do vow offerings and free will offerings and Thanksgiving offerings in this day and age?
You have to answer your own question on that one. I'm not going to go there, to tell you the honest truth. All the Messiah says, let your yes be yes, your no be no. I make my life simple, real simple. My life is simple that way. Yes.
I know that people, when they enter in, if they are working in an area that they are not normally prescribed for that area, they will enter into a Nazirite vow. And when they're done with that, they cut their hair to start with. Then during the period of their vow.
That's a Nazirite vow, but other vows do not require that.
Right, but this still requires an offering right. Because at the end their hair is burned. They cut their hair off and then burn the hair.
Or we continue on about being anything that's being offered. It must not be blind, must be broken, must be maimed, must have everything in perfection to present it before God. Because the person is offering it is of the house of Israel, someone from that house, or that tribe. And they're given what God says is holy. So when God, when you give something to God, it's holy. It's not something, but he tells you specifically what to give, doesn't he? You say, well, I need to sacrifice my work. That's not in the Torah. Oh, I need to sacrifice by not drinking water. No, that's not in the Torah. I need to sacrifice by, walking 5 miles a day. No, that's not written in the Torah. What does he want in return? Yes. Something that's, okay, go farther than that. Get past that. That's already happened to you. What does he want you to offer him? Romans 11, the 12th chapter. A living sacrifice. Not a dying one. Something that's alive. That's you and me. We become the living sacrifice. There's no more. You are it. Whether you like to say, well, you know, I'm not sacrificing. I'm not the one that sacrificed anything. Yes, you are. You're sacrificing yourself. Right? Now, you could say, well, I can't sacrifice myself. I'm not holy. What? The Word of God says, if you do this, you're holy. If you do this, you're clean. Would he not accept that? According to the Word of God, yes, he does. Written Old Testament. Old Torah. Okay, wrap it up now. The most interesting thing about all of this, you know, Ellie brought up this thing about offering a young thing, and it had to be on the eighth, had to be taken from his mother on the eighth day. Now, the thing is still leaving milk from his mother on the eighth day. Right? But you can offer it on the eighth day. 8-day-year-old goat. Or an 8-day-year-old what? Ox. 8-day-year-old lamb. Why the eighth day? I have a slight idea.
Well, on the eighth day, the babies get circumcised.
Boys. Hey, boys get circumcised, so something now becomes God's. All right? And we have what's called the eighth day during the Feast of Tabernacles. On the eighth day, we become God's. We belong to him. He now owns us. Because that's what it's all about. Yes, Pat. Okay. Does that make sense to you? So it doesn't matter the difference. You know, eighth day, it belongs to God. And what are you supposed to do with it? Burn it. Turn into smoke. What happens when there's a forest fire? What happens to the smoke?
It goes up.
It just disappears. It's out of sight. It goes up, and you can't trace where it goes. You don't know where it goes. It can go anywhere. And so when God wants something offered to him up that is holy into a holy sacrifice, it all goes up. And goes, and he now owns it. He owns the smoke. Because why? on the day of holiness, on the day of Yom Kippurim, what must the priest do? What must he do? Sorry, what? He goes into the Holy of Holies. He doesn't offer the goat. He doesn't offer his deer. He offers, first thing he has to do is put in smoke. Smoke. Then he puts in the blood offering. First things first. First things first. Keep the order going. Because he says if you don't do that, you are the one I'm going to take. And literally, in a sense, the Messiah is the one who was literally taken. He went through the Holy of Holies. Right? You understand what I'm saying so far? Not that hard. This is all about the Messiah, how he works, how he thinks, how he acts, according to what God has written. Yes?
Oh, sorry, I forgot.
Okay.
So is Messiah our smoke?
I'm sorry, what?
Are you saying the Messiah is like our smoke? He takes everything away?
Yeah, he took it with him. Messiah became what we call, he became a cloud. I remember after his resurrection, he'd go anywhere he wanted to go. Walk through walls, because it's not bothered. He didn't stop by that kind of stuff, right? So smoke represents something else. Is it real smoke representing real smoke, or does smoke represent something? Yes.
It's like the spirit. You don't know where it comes from or where it goes.
Yep. Represent the spirit going up. That's not hard to figure out. That's why their offerings are done that way. Yes.
And he guides you during the day, but nobody necessarily sees that he's doing the guiding.
And that's how you become a living sacrifice. Who knows if you are sacrificing yourself to God? Who else? Nobody. Only he knows. And blessed be he that he's the one that monitors it all. And we have to be careful about it if we think we should monitor somebody else's smoke. Yeah. Work.
You know what's cool?
What?
In Hoshek, the Hoshek. Dark, that's where the fire is.
Always.
He leads you in the day by the cloud, but at night, the fire is in the darkness. So be careful. Don't want to be in the darkness where the fire is. You're better off in the daytime with the cloud.
Tohu vavohu vahoshech. Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. What did he do during that time? It was Hoshech time. What did he do? Light come. Fire come. Light come. And it came. Notice it says his spirit moved upon the depths, the deep, deep, dark, dark, darkness of the waters. Didn't on the surface stuff. He went all the way down. What did he pull up? Second day, he separated the waters. Third day, he brought up what? The earth. And on that earth day, the third day, he brought up the earth, but he'd bring up plants. Then the fourth day, he brought and created the heavens. He created the stars and the moon and the sun. Then on the fifth day, what did he do? He brought life in the air and brought life in the water. Up out of the earth. Up out of the earth. The sun, moon, and stars are not of the earth. Very important to know that. Yes?
Isn't that a beautiful picture of his death, burial, and resurrection?
You could picture it that way, yes. And then on the sixth day, what happened? Then he created the land animals that come up from, and all the creeping crawling thing, up from the earth. Right? And the last thing he created was the human being. Did he make a mistake?
No.
Was Adam made perfect without a flaw? Was Yeshua brought down from above perfect without a flaw? The one that came down from above, keep in mind, didn't come from the earth up. He came down. All right. Adam came up from the earth. And guess what happened to Adam? He went back to the earth. That's his home. That's your home. That's our home. That's a cow's home. That's a dog's home. That's where we belong. The earth says, you know, you're mine because you're part of me. You're part of me. I'm taking you back. I own you. I own you. Lock, stock. But he couldn't own. He could not own the Messiah. Could not take him. The earth did not consume him. Because it didn't come from the earth. It came from above. All right? But the big thing he says, the very last statement down here, verse 32, neither shall you profane my holy name, but it will be holy among the children of Israel. This is the high priest saying, don't abuse my name. The actions I have set you to do, the assignment I have set you to do, make sure you do not do them in any other fashion or form than the way I've told you. Why? I brought you out of the land of Egypt. Now we say, huh? What? What was wrong with the land of Egypt? They had tremendous amount of wealth, tremendous amount of food, tremendous amount of... Remember they complained because they didn't have more food to eat? They had a lot of good stuff to eat. Now we have a picture of Sesame DeMille, like it happened for 4,000 years. Beep, 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 beep. It isn't. It's the last generation that took place. Happened during Tom Moses' time, not before, when he was born. We have to put them into perspective because it's called the fourth generation. And he's told Adam, I mean Abraham, in the fourth generation, I'll pull them out. Because they will be then abused. All right? So he brought them out from what owned them. Who owned them? Not the Egyptian people. Who owned them? Pharaoh. Pharaoh owned them. And that was death to them. And God called them out from death into life. Yes, it's all physical. Forget about it, right? The Messiah is going to call us up out of death. He's going to call us up out of the dying. He's going to make us who are mortal, immortal. He's going to take those who are already corrupted, dissolved, gone into the earth, bring them back up, and they will not be corrupted anymore. Bring them. I am the one that raised you, brought you out of death, like he did ancient Israel. Out of your own sin and difficulty, your problems. I know you had them. You got it, but I brought you out. I'm bringing you out. Now you're mine. Does that make sense to you? Every time you see a parallel happen in ancient Egypt, it's actually the fiction of what God is going to do and has done and will be doing to us and all mankind. All mankind. Yes, even the Egyptians. Even the Egyptians. And I'm sorry, even if those other religious people you can't stand. Because God's not a religious person. God is what? Creator of heaven and earth. And he will fulfill his will, whether we like it or not. He will fulfill his will because that's his will. And we could say, well, I hope he doesn't will that version of life. Really? You better. If you want that, he may not will your life and will that person's life. Because you're not of the house of God. The book of Hebrews talks about what house we are of. We're not of the house, of the house of Judah. We're not of the house of Ephraim. We're not of the house of Manasseh. We're not of the house of Greeks. We're not of the house of Russians. We're not of the house of... We are the house of what? We are the house of the living God. That's who we are. And if we want to put a label upon everybody else, that's not good. Because when you put a label on somebody else, God may put that label and cast it away and bring them into his house. All of a sudden, they had the label of God on them. What are you to call them? Don't know when God's going to deal with anybody. That's the most beautiful thing about this creator of heaven and earth and his son. And it says there, this is Philippians, if I'm not mistaken, since he began a good work in you, he is going to finish it. We cannot finish the work of God. It doesn't work. He finishes the work of God. That's his job. He is the husbandman of what? The vineyard. And we come off of a thing called a branch. Remember I told you what the Hebrew word for tribe meant? The old word meaning a branch. The 12 branches coming off of a vine. You understand what I'm saying? We have a sometimes think about, I belong to this tribe, I belong to that tribe. No, no. If you are a tribe, if you are a breath, if you are a tribe of the Messiah, then your tribe is Yahshua, the Son of God. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not that hard to figure out. And we start labeling ourselves this way or that way. God says, no, you're not. Don't label something that you're not. I have already told you who you are and what you are and where you're going and why. You are mine. You don't belong to anybody else. Now you're smoke to me. Now you're smoke to me. You all belong to me.